Okay, we're recording. You can sit here. John?
It's going to be a pretty short interview. I'm just gonna
ask, okay.
Is that all right with you?
It's that is like fine with me.
15 to 30 minutes.
Uh-huh. So. Well, first let me ask you, here, I'm going to close the door just for this since I'm recording.
Yep.
Get some fidelity out of this. Usually I keep the door open. What is your goal in this interview, and what are you expecting from me? Just so I know.
Well, since I'm an undergrad and I don't really know what to expect from college, I'm hoping that you would give me some advice when graduating or...
For where to be when you graduate?
Yeah, where to be when I graduate. Mm-hmm. Life experience, okay. I guess.
Okay, I have some life experience.
So my first question is, what is your research? And yeah.
Okay, well, my primary thing is bicycles, motorcycles, and skateboards. Mm-hmm. I'm not faculty here. I don't have an academic research program, but I do a lot of work around bicycles, motorcycles, and skateboards, like I made that bicycle.
Yep.
And that bicycle has a lot of parts that are designed by me and... Like a, were you here with the Astro 220?
Astro 220, yeah.
There we go. Like this part, I designed this and my friend and I made these.
Cool.
And these carry a chain ring and things like that for bicycle use. And it solves a specific problem.
Right.
So that's the kind of things that I do around bicycles and skateboards. I have the 3D printed skateboard trucks and... You know, I'm trying to be at the cutting edge or as best I can be, given my skill set and where I am and everything.
Is this for personal use or are you giving this to the...
I share the information on my website. Okay. Were you able to look at my website?
No.
Okay. You should do that before you interview someone again.
Sorry.
But I share that online and there's obviously virtual and real communities out there in the world that can look at that, the information that I share about how I went about solving a problem, and hopefully they gain from it. Mm-hmm. You know, that's one of my big goals here. I mean, many people work at a school for particular reasons that don't have to do with getting rich, right? And I have some altruistic goals. I have some... let's say shallow, prideful goals. And I have some goals of just what I feel is important for anybody who's on Earth to do as part of the tribe type of thing.
Are you planning on staying here for, I wouldn't say the rest of your life, but how long are you planning on staying here working this job?
I've got a few more years. I'm old. I'm 54 now.
54.
My eyes are going. My brain is going. It doesn't get easier as you get older to, or for me, it's been a problem remembering things or having my brain work as fast as it used to, but I'm kind of seeing the decay and I'm kind of thinking, okay, what am I going to do? Maybe I don't need to be here forever. I hope I don't die in this room. How's that?
But it still seems like the passion is there, right?
I've lived my whole life, trying to be steered by my passions. That's what got me to this level, is trying to get to that place over the horizon, so to speak. I think if you're not aspiring for something and striving continually, you don't get very far and you don't do very much. I think strife is a worthy thing for anybody to have.
Right. Right.
And strife, generally, when you hear it, is a negative, has a negative connotation. But I think it's actually a very positive thing. When you meet somebody that's striving, that's stoked, it's Monday morning and they can't wait to get to work because they got something to do. Mm-hmm. Like those are the people you want to be around. Mm-hmm. You know. So I think striving is a pretty good thing.
My next question is, So how long have you been at, did you get a degree here or?
No, I didn't get a degree. Okay. I don't have a degree. There was a New Yorker or an Atlantic audio article that was on their podcast this summer about late bloomers. And they were talking about late bloomers. And I probably fit into that category. The world, as we've constructed it, very much rewards early bloomers. If you're doing calculus in junior high school, you are going to be rewarded. You are going to be put in special programs. You're going to be directed towards special schools. You have a very high chance of succeeding the way our society is structured. But if you aren't, if you have distractions or difficulties, or you're not working at a high academic level in high school, you've, in many ways, you've already lost, or at least you're starting 100 yards back. And let's say you develop a bit later, like in your mid to late 20s, and you get to where you need to go, even if it's much higher than some of those other people, the world doesn't care anymore. And you're not going to get rewarded outside of your what you can make of the world yourself as a, say, a entrepreneur, a business person working for yourself. But it's very difficult because you're really starting from behind. So anyway, late start. So I didn't get a degree. I failed out of school for all the right reasons. I was not meant to be there at that time. The thing is, I went back. I did go back to school maybe a decade later and did all the physics, did all the calculus, but then life is a bumpy road and something else pulled me off and I never ended up with a degree.
Do you ever wish that you continued pushing towards that degree? Or
I don't think degrees are... this is a tricky subject because I think for most of us, including myself, having that degree box to check on an application is very important. But that's where the value of a degree ends. It doesn't carry a lot of value other than the fact that you can say you attained one. You know, people often say that a college education is the most valuable thing and will get you further. And they misphrase it because it's not the education that's important, it's the attainment of a degree. And just being able to check that box is what's valuable. Mm-hmm. But you'll find later on that you learn much more out of school than you ever did in school. If you're doing things right. If you can't say that, you're probably doing things very poorly in your life. But yeah, you'll learn a lot more in your first couple years out of school than you ever did during school.
Because I feel like right now, maybe it's just because I'm like a first semester freshman, but I feel like a lot of my, the general ed classes I'm taking are not really applicable to my life. Like I'm taking African communication studies.
So you want to communicate in Africa?
No.
Well, that's what I'm saying. This school is terrible regarding general ed. It is inauthentic, it's fraudulent and phony. It teaches you to be a bad person. It teaches you not to think critically. I certainly think a lot of those gen ed requirements, the fake ones, like African communication or whatever, those are fake bullshit gen eds that are about indoctrination and things like that. But what's really a problem there is that you should be in school if you're going to be here, but you should be studying something that is valuable to you. Not something that's making you into a bullshitter, right? And that's a real crime that you're forced to take that. Mm-hmm. I will say, though, there's real value in you learning about history and civics and how we as a tribe function. Those are valuable and important things. And so I'm not saying gen ed is bad for a college student. Because there's a lot you can learn there, but I think the fraudulent stuff that this school pushes is really problematic. I will say, though, if you're a first-year student, it's really important for you. You know, you were talking about it doesn't seem to apply to you. Like, choosing your major is very important and ensuring you're in the right one. And really examining why you chose your major and what are you trying to do or where are you trying to get to? Like, what does your roadmap look like? I talked with a lot of students about the idea of making a business plan for yourself. Ostensibly, your college education is an investment, right? It's an investment in your future. Okay, you're going to spend 4 years and let's say $60,000 or $80,000 to move you closer to your future. What is that future? Where are you trying to get to? And are you setting yourself up for success when you get there to make it worth the 4 years and $60,000 to $80,000 that you spend? And if you haven't put real thought into that, like it's a business plan, you're probably not going to come on the come into the upside of that equation, you know.
Because right now, because astrophysicists don't really, they're kind of out of a job if you only have a bachelor's degree, and they usually need. Like my family was always saying, if you're going to go into astrophysics, you at least need a doctorate.
Do you want to be an astrophysicist?
It's something that I like, but I'm not passionate about, which is what I'm scared of.
You got to be tricky about passion. Passion's a tricky thing. I think that we need passions in our lives. We need a good story to tell ourselves for what we're doing and why. But sometimes your job isn't going to be your passion, but it should be interesting. It should be engaging. It should be something that you don't mind doing or maybe enjoy. But it doesn't have to be a passion. Now, you know, when you say you want you're steering toward astrophysics, or I don't know if your family has pushed you toward that. Why did you choose astrophysics?
Just because when I was a kid, I really liked to, I liked astronomy when I was a kid, and I just looked at a ton of videos on YouTube on exoplanets, stars, stellar objects, stuff like that.
Okay. So you find that interesting or compelling?
Yeah.
I find a lot of things interesting and compelling. I don't do them for work. You know? I'm not saying that you're in the wrong place. I'm saying we should have lots of interests and compulsions of curiosity. But you know, you said lots of astrophysics are out of a job with just an undergrad, that you need a grad or a PhD. It's like, well, okay, let's say you had a PhD in astrophysics. What job are you gonna get? I mean, is that the goal, that you get a job, or is this merely a curiosity project? What is the goal of your investment?
I think it's curiosity.
So if you come out of school 8 years from now with a PhD in astrophysics, and you won't have a job, that's fine.
Probably not, no.
Because if your goal with school and this investment in education is to be employed and earn enough money to pay for a house, maybe even have a family and children. Do you know how much it costs to live in the Bay Area and have a child?
A lot more than any other.
I think annual household income currently is approximately like, what is it, like $250,000 a year? That means you and your wife or husband or whatever you're into have to be pulling in 125K each and continue that through the childbearing years. That's a lot of money. Nobody I know here makes that kind of money unless they're an administrator, right? So, I mean, unless you're planning on living somewhere else, and it's like, well, what are the jobs there, right? This is why a business plan is important. Where are you trying to get to? Where do you want to live? What kind of life do you want? What does it take to attain that? And run the numbers. Because if having just a condo, a two-bedroom condo, and you're a couple and you want to have a kid is minimum household income, and I'm just throwing a number out there, it's probably more, $250K a year, you got to bring that kind of coin in. And that's, you got to think about how are you going to earn that kind of money. You know, you may be able to get an astrophysics degree, but what are the job opportunities that you'll get?
Probably mostly in the research department.
In a research department where?
Like a couple well-known companies, like maybe NASA or SpaceX. That's what my dream is, or dream.
Is NASA or SpaceX? Those are two very different things. What do you mean your dream? What is your dream?
To work, help one of those companies.
So be employed at them? Like, do you have a job you'd like to do there?
No, I haven't.
Just be employed, so if you worked at the coffee shop at NASA, you'd be happy with that?
No, not that.
Okay, then what do you mean? Be specific. What do you see yourself doing at those companies? And are there other companies that you might do something? What is it that you'd be doing? Are there other companies besides NASA and SpaceX? Because we've heard a lot about those on the news, but the thing is, I mean, there's McDonnell Douglas. They make space vehicles. Boeing makes space vehicles. Shit. Norrell, or whatever they are now, make satellites and things like that. Amazon has a satellite program, you know? Like, I think Facebook does too. You know, they have space programs, you know? It's like, why NASA and SpaceX?
Probably because it's the only ones that I know about.
So maybe you need to do some research into what other companies exist and what they do. Mm-hmm. Okay, now what would you be doing there?
I don't necessarily want to be doing like the building or the manufacturing of parts, but more discovery, if that makes sense.
Discover what?
Planets, stars, galaxies.
Is that what they do at NASA and SpaceX?
Not sure.
I would be, then it sounds like you should find that out.
Yeah.
Right? Because, I mean, I'm not an expert. Don't even consider me one here. But the thing is, I don't think that's what NASA or SpaceX does, you know? Certainly that's what an astronomer in an academic department might do like ours, or over at, some of our people have left to go to Yale Astronomy, and they do planet finding and things like that. And there's a program over in Berkeley. But that's a professorship. Have you run the numbers on what it takes to become a professor in terms of odds? Like the odds of getting a professorship for each graduate, each person that enters a PhD program to each person that gets a professorship, you know, run those numbers and see how good of a chance you might have of getting a professorship, because it's very low. And when you get there, you get paid not much. Do you know what a starting salary is at this university for a professor?
Just a rough guess, but it's in San Francisco, so maybe 70, 80K.
It's $82,000 a year.
$82,000.
Do you know how much it costs to rent an apartment in San Francisco, a two-bedroom apartment?
$3,000, is that?
I think that's low.
Slow.
Yeah, I would think it's about four and a half. What's 4.5 times 12? Let's see, 4.5 times 12. 54,000. So that leaves you $28,000 for everything besides rent. Mm-hmm. In the Bay Area, we'd call those starvation wages. So that's what we do here. You know, that's starting salary. Now, your professors may earn slightly more than that, but certainly we don't increase salaries very often or very much, mm-hmm. right? So that's why I say run some numbers. When you say, I want to do this, find out more. Or when you say, what's my dream or whatever, it's like, think about what are the odds of attaining that.
Be realistic.
Well, there's being realistic where you sell yourself short. And there's being realistic where you set yourself up for success. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
I'm not saying don't, you know, settle for what you get or whatever. Mm-hmm. Remember, I started with strife. Striving for something over the horizon. Mm-hmm. But if there's a 1 in 10,000 chance that you get a professorship, and that's what you're counting on, that's tough, right? And if you aren't already the best in your class, mm-hmm. it's even tougher, right? Your odds go down as each of these things. If your family is your family wealthy currently?
Yeah.
Okay, you're from a wealthy family.
Yeah.
So that increases your odds of becoming a professor. Is one of your family members currently a professor?
No, none of them are.
Okay, so that diminishes your odds. Most professors, they come from a family of professors. Most professors are from wealthy families.
I see.
You know, but you know, you kind of factor those things in. Mm-hmm. But if you're from a wealthy family, that opens up your horizons and you can take greater risks than poor people can. Mm-hmm. Poor people can't afford to take too many great risks mm-hmm. because the odds of success are low and the punishment is very high. But you can screw up an awful lot if you have wealth behind you. That's one of the greatest advantages of being young and wealthy or from a wealthy family, is you can make mistakes. And making mistakes is awesome for prototyping and figuring out solutions. So you can take some risks and you can take some gambles and try some new things and go someplace. You can work an internship and cover your rent. You know, you can do stuff like that. And I would highly recommend you get an internship as soon as possible for the summer or whatever. Because you want to learn about the world. The world's a crazy place. And you don't learn about the world in school. And if you get a good internship over the summer and you can cover rent, you know, you can go there and work for 3 months with these people, like say an engineering department somewhere, doing satellite work or whatever. And you come back, let's say in the fall next year, and you've just done that. And you can go, you know what? I really loved management. I loved the idea of moving the money around and funding departments and how we run facilities and, you know, getting financing done. Mm. Or you could be like, I really love the engineering. You know, these people were doing CAD models all day and, you know, doing the math and solving the weird problem type of thing. Or you can just be like, I didn't like anything about that at all. Well, that's good too. I mean, if you come back from an internship and say, I didn't like anything about that place or what they were doing there. Well, that's, you know what you don't like. Imagine if you went through grad school and got a PhD. And then you got out and found out, I don't like this at all.
Right, right.
That's a bad time to find out, right? So that's why getting an internship is really cool and valuable, because you learn what you like and what you don't like. And if you continually reevaluate where you're going, you know, based on that, is really helpful.
Okay.
How's that for a long answer?
That's pretty good. Are you okay if I asked, actually you kind of covered a lot of them. I guess my last question is, what general life advice can you give me? as an 18-year-old.
There's a lot. There's a lot that an 18-year-old could get for advice that would be really helpful and really make a big difference. I've tried to give you a little right now. You want to focus, especially as a guy. Are you a straight dude?
Or, I'm a straight dude.
Okay. As a straight guy, you need to build some value. And how you build value, because that's what's going to make you attractive to others, especially to women, is how valuable you are, both to the tribe and your future prospects of earning, right? And that means you're on track to build yourself a career that is meaningful and will cover the costs of your and your family's existence. That's your job as a guy, as a male in the tribe, right? Females have a different role generally, but you... Males are generally valueless. I'm sure you've heard that before.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're valueless. So what you desperately need to do is build value. You need to pull yourself out from the crowd and say, I'm one of the good ones. I'm going somewhere. Mm-hmm. And you need to get your shit together. You need to be productively focused. So you're on a mission. You're trying to get somewhere and it makes sense. Now, it may not make sense to everybody around you, mm-hmm. but you kind of need to do that. And it's going to be tough mm-hmm. because let's say you have a cool invention and you got this invention thing like this. And you're like, I totally believe in this. Now, there's two things you have to do. Ask yourself, is this worth believing in? Because you can believe in it and delude yourself and just be crazy, right? You got to be careful about that. Or you can be like, I've done the analysis of the market. I've done the costing analysis. I've found out how it's made and I've found the cheapest way to do it and it fits in. I've checked all the variables and this works. And everybody else around you could be looking at you like you're a fool. And what's one of the most difficult things about being a man is you need to believe in yourself mm-hmm. when others don't. And not because you're an idiot, not because you're being foolish, but because you know you're on the right path and you're brave enough to do it alone and you're going to do the work and you're going to show up and you're going to make that shit happen. And... you may not succeed the first year or the second year, but maybe on the fifth or sixth year, things start coming together. Pretty soon, you're a dude with a factory, and you got 20 employees. And maybe you're not even pulling good money right now because it's all going back into the business. But you're a man about town. You're the guy. You got friends that trust you, and they believe, like, you come through for your friends. And people know that your name is good because you don't rip people off and shit like that. And 10 years from now, or whatever, you've got a house. You're financially secure. You're the person people point to and say, why can't you be like him? But the thing is, the only way you got there was to believe in yourself because nobody else would. And that is difficult. And it's difficult, especially in the modern world, for young men to think that way. But it's really one of the things you have to do. But being able to be critical of yourself, where you can call yourself out on your bullshit and say, that's silly. Like, no one's looking for yarn-woven lanyards or something like that. And there's no way to make money. Look at the numbers and... It just isn't a thing. And you need to be able to call yourself on that and say, that's not a thing. you know, rather than just believing in yourself so much, you go down some insane path that is only going to fail. And anyone in their right mind would have been able to point that out early. Mm-hmm. Well, you need to be able to do that for yourself. And have friends around you that you can trust and are moving you forward. Mm-hmm. If you've got a bunch of friends that hang out and get high and never show up, when you need their help, they're not there. Now's the time in your life. And this is a tricky one for your age, freshman in college. This is your first semester at university. Mm-hmm. You've got friends from high school, hopefully. You know, you've got friends from high school. And some of them are junkies. Some of them are losers. Some of them are liars and cheats. And now's kind of the point in your life where you break from those people. And you say, I need to find new friends. Friends that aren't cheats, that I can trust. When they say they'll be there, they're there. And shit like that. The sooner you start doing that, the better. Because if you hang out with losers, you know, they say, you're the average of the five people you spend the most time with.
Yeah.
You ever hear that?
Yeah.
It's true. And it's like, if all your friends are losers and just sit at home playing video games getting high, mm-hmm. guess who you are?
Same people.
Yeah. Yeah, so all that's tough. It's tough for a dude right now. Mm-hmm. Young women, most of their value is front-loaded. Their youth, their beauty mm-hmm. turns into their value. And that fades later. Your value starts growing later. You'll be experiencing the most value mm-hmm. that you have as a man, generally. You know, there's a bifurcated distribution. It's not all men, hashtag all that crap. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? But the thing is, in general, as a dude, you're going to be most valuable from 35 to 55. Right? Mm-hmm. And the girls are most valuable right now. And they start losing it around 30,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So there's a big issue with that kind of distribution and who has value when. Mm-hmm. But what you have to do right now is create value in your life where you're a meaningful dude. You're a good friend. Mm-hmm. You're not a scumbag and you're working hard to get somewhere, right?
Yeah.
So that stuff is fucking real. Mm-hmm. That shit's so real. All that kind of stuff. But you do have to, like when I said, most of your value is going to be 35 to 55 type of thing. Your job now is to build yourself into that person mm-hmm. who at 35 is valuable. How are you going to do that? And I would say that school is important. You got to get a degree mm-hmm. just because you got to check the box. That's how the world works. But you need to do your own work outside of your classes. I think all you're going to get here is classes, generally. Everything else is going to be guided by you. I talk to students a lot about portfolio. And I doubt you've heard that term expressed around sciences or engineering, mainly only in art classes or something like that. But, you know, you have your resume, that's places you've worked. You have your degree, that's a certification, supposedly, that you have some measured capacity. But your portfolio is things you've done, right? And, you know, when I talk about my portfolio, I've done that. I've done that. I can point to it and say, I did a real thing. And it could be 10 lines of computer code. One thing I talk to some students about is I have a website, and on it are all kinds of projects that I work on and discuss and things that I've worked on. Let's see this thing. Now, reading, writing, arithmetic, you've heard about that? Okay, that's what they say you learn at school, in high school. Supposed to look, the three R's, they call it, reading, writing, and arithmetic, mm-hmm. right? It's kind of funny, arithmetic, because it's arithmetic. It doesn't be really... Anyway, You should be able to learn. You should learn to write. When was the last time you wrote for real?
Like, outside of school?
Yeah, the real. That's the real stuff.
Never, I've never done that.
Okay, start. You need to start writing. It's very important. Now, it can be a journal, or it can be technical description, or writing about problems that you're trying to solve. Mm-hmm. Like, you can, let's say you're in a calculus class, and you don't understand, what is it, L'Hopital's rule or whatever like that, or some Euler shit or whatever. Well, you're sitting there pulling your hair out, and it's like, well, write it out. Write about the problem. I'm having a problem understanding this. This is what I understand. This is what I think it's trying to do. Blah, blah, blah. This is what really confuses me. Mm-hmm. Write. And the thing is, writing's a superpower. It helps you organize your thoughts. It turns you into a better thinker, right? Now, I've written about this problem with bicycle brake mounting. And I describe it. And I show what Shimano, a manufacturer, describes in SRAM, and I say, but I don't think that's the right way. And I go through and I actually find out a formula for figuring it out. And I show biker friends of mine different ways of looking at this and describe these scenarios. And I show some that I have on hand and show some different setups. You know, I didn't have to make anything here.
That's super cool.
Well, the point here is that I didn't need a machine shop. I didn't need to buy any materials. Hmm. I didn't need maybe you need a rudimentary measuring implement, but you don't need anything crazy. Mm-hmm. And you can write about stuff like that. And you have a computer, you learn to use Photoshop or GIMP or whatever program, or Inkscape or Illustrator or some CAD programs or whatever. Hmm. But you can make drawings. To draw, like here. This is just coming out of Excel, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm explaining something. I'm using just Microsoft Excel. Boom, 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 boom. And it's that kind of work that you're truly supposedly trying to learn here at an academic university, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, you're supposed to be able to take problems, dissolve them into their components, and establish a solution, whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. Well, writing is an important part of that. Also, you need to be able to read. You know, you need to be able to take some technical information and digest it, mm-hmm. and comprehend what it's saying. You need to learn about the vocabulary of your people. Let's say you want to be an astrophysicist, so you need to learn all the vocabulary that astrophysicists use. Mm-hmm. You know, you need to know what it really means to say black hole, and then throw out some math to go along with it, right? Mm-hmm. Like here, I'm describing some upgrades to my frame fixture that I just did over there, right? And here it is, and I made a video. You can make a video, right?
Yep.
You know, boom. And I'm talking about this stuff. I'm taking quality photographs. Notice how they're not dark and shaded. How you can see all the detail very clearly of what's going on here. And I'm trying to show this, and notice how that's nicely in focus, center frame. We know what we're talking about, right? Mm-hmm. I'm using the tools around me. The tools aren't just the keyboard. The tools are a camera or whatever. And there's more writing. It's not fanciful. I'm not talking about Alice in Wonderland. I'm talking about those blocks of metal over there, right? Taking more pictures, more illustration coming out of CAD. Here's a model of just some bolts, but these go into this. This is a problem I've been working on. And I'm like a week into this. I'm nerding the hell out. Like, this thing is crazy. It's primarily this part here that I'm gonna have machined, and I've solved this problem that's been bugging me for years. Looks simple, but it's, you know, it is what it is. Just saying, When you get into describing things and writing about things, you're able to think at a much higher level. Mm-hmm. And you practice a lot, you know? When I start talking about this subject, whatever it is, when I've written it out, I've already practiced all my examples. I know that it goes A, B, C, D in this order, and that's how I'll say it. So if I bump into Elon Musk in the hall and I'm trying to tell him I'm cool and I know rockets, mm-hmm. I go, hey, Elon, A, B, C, D, check my shit. Look at photographs, you know? Like, I've got my stuff in line. I'm ready to go. You know that whole expression, luck is when opportunity and preparation collide? You want to be a lucky motherfucker, right? Luck is when opportunity and preparation collide. You want to show up at some social engagement where you know there's going to be a lot of nerds just like you, but they have jobs and you don't, and you want to be prepared to get a job, and you've shown up, and you talk to the right people, mm-hmm. and that's creating luck. Mm-hmm. You're ready to go, and you're talking with the right people. How much more lucky can you get, right? Mm-hmm. But writing will help you do that, definitely, you know? And you know, I'm using spreadsheets to solve problems, you know? And this is portfolio,
right?
Like if someone says, well, what have you done? You point to this.
Yeah.
And you say, I've done this. And it could, and like I said, it could be 10 lines of code. And you write 10 lines of sick Python code or whatever you're doing, C++. And you write 4 pages explaining why those 10 lines are so cool and why they're executing in a certain way, and that certain way, you know, conserves resources, you know, doesn't burden the processor, it bypasses all this logic or whatever like that. Mm-hmm. You know, you can talk about that 10 lines of code. It's not just the 10 lines of code. It's why is that cool? And if you describe that, that's portfolio level work. What have you done? Oh, I've written some code, but I've explained to you exactly why that code's baller, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And you can start that today. Building portfolio. What have you done? You know? Now, astrophysics, it's tough around here. We're in an astronomy department. We have an observatory, we have a planetarium, and we have some people that have done research. Okay, how does that work for you? What are you doing with those implements? When was the last time you sat there with a telescope for 6 hours straight? What would you do if you had access to a telescope for 6 hours straight? You should have a damn good answer ready to go since you want to be an astrophysics major.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
How about that planetarium? What's the first thing you'd put up on that planetarium? How can you not have an answer ready to go?
I haven't done my research.
Well, the thing is, it's like, why the heck do you want to be an astrophysics person? We're sitting here with a telescope and a planetarium. And you aren't breaking down the doors? You know what I'm saying? And that's the thing. Maybe you need to, like, spend a long night with a telescope. Have you ever... It's tough for young people these days, the idea of boredom, because it's very difficult for you to be bored. You can't remember a time when this wasn't within arm's reach. You can't remember it. And on that was the compendium of human knowledge. Every song, every movie, every video, every person on earth is within reach with this, okay? You can always pick up this and it's gonna make you feel good. Because boredom is a son of a bitch and it hurts. I was lucky. I was born in 1970. So most of my childhood, we didn't have much but 3 channels on the TV. Anytime you used the telephone, it was long distance. So you didn't really call anybody, you know? And it was boring. It was really boring. And that was one of the greatest gifts I could have been given. Because what happens when you're bored is you go through an initial period of pain. You know, spend an hour without any of your devices. just sitting there. And it hurts, right? It's more for you than me because you don't even remember a time, right? But the thing is that it hurts. Well, yeah, it hurts. And then it hurts some more. And then you start getting mad at yourself because you're such a loser that you're bored. And that's really all your fault because boring people are bored. And then the miracle happens. And this is the greatest thing that ever happens to people. Right about then, they get up off their ass and they start just fucking doing something. Doing something. Something real. Something to break the boredom. They make something. They carve a piece of wood. They paint a painting. They write a computer program. Whatever. They do something. They make some pants or a shirt out of with a sewing machine. Do something to break the boredom. And it's productive and it's creative and it's a whole new world. You know, I talk about this fixture over here. Let's go over here. You know, that part I just showed you, here's a part that I made that's a rough prototype. And these are the clamps that are going to go on it. And that's how, and everything here started that way. And I've been staring at this for days, the shape of this. It's made. I could use this just how it is, but I'm not done thinking about it. I'm going to stare at this and I'm going to get so bored of looking at this that eventually I'm going to start seeing things I didn't see. I'm going to start understanding the problem at a much deeper level than I did before. And I'm going to start making real progress. And that's what I've done. That's what's on that over there. It's a huge improvement from what this initially was. And that's a place you're going to need to try to get to, right? Where you're starting to make this connect with this world, right? Connect with it in a way that... And it's all yours. It's not mine. It's you. And you're going to find a way to do it. As long as you aren't just taking drugs or alcohol or just masturbating or doing whatever the fuck that's merely just killing time.
Yeah.
But you're actually getting somewhere. And it can be your thing. Like earlier you talked about astronomy and you were curious about exoplanets and things like that. And it's like, yeah, you can think all about that. You can look into it and see what kind of instruments do they use to find exoplanets. I'm going to read this book all about this astronomer from 1940 that discovered the first exoplanet or something, and read a biography of that person and go, well, what problems did they have to solve? And you're just filling your time. You're just like, oh, I'm going to read a book about a person that did a cool thing. You could read about Marie Curie's life or something. Important woman that lived at an important time, and her husband died the hard way and she died the hard way, but like it was a crazy time. Biographies are huge, you know. How's this? You might get down on yourself and think, damn, I'm a loser, life sucks, I'll never stand a chance, or whatever. I don't know, whatever you're thinking. Or think you're all that and you don't have anything to back it up. I don't know. But reading biographies, or even listening to an audiobook biography about someone else, like Ben Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, Napoleon Bonaparte, or whoever strikes your fancy, but where you get into their life and what problems they had and what world they were living in, it's very helpful in thinking about your own. Because this person, like Ben Franklin, like he was a badass, legit badass, right? And he did more for science than you'll ever conceive of doing. And he was busy getting laid in Paris. That was what he wanted to do the most. That guy was a party animal, right? And he was there at the Constitutional Convention when they were writing the U.S. Constitution. And he was helping them fix it up so it was killer, you know? And it's like, you go, wow, these great people, and they had problems. You saw, did you see Hamilton, the musical?
No.
Okay. Are you around anybody that has the Disney Channel?
Yes.
Okay. I believe on the Disney Channel, they have a movie version of the stage show Hamilton. You should definitely watch it. One, it's very good. Two, it's fairly current. It's got rap type of stuff in it. It's interesting. It's transgressive too. You know, all the old white dudes are played by black guys and shit like that. You know, so they're kind of like playing with that edge. But the thing is, it's really talking about this dude Hamilton, that was one of the greatest Americans in terms of shaping our country, and he was a flawed motherfucker. As smart as he was, and as killer as he was kind of a shitbag on some levels too. You know, and it kind of, can kind of help you give yourself a break, but you know you have to get back to work. Mm-hmm. So I would just say, all that shit's really important, and you need to build value.
Build value, got it.
Build value,
yeah.
And not bullshit value. Not like Instagram shots of me at getting bottle service somewhere. Mm-hmm. That's garbage.
Yeah.
Like up here, integrity is what you do when nobody's watching. Authenticity is what you do when everybody's watching. You want to be an authentic motherfucker. You want to have it so that nobody gets the wrong idea about who you are when you're out in public. You're not doing things that you don't agree with. And not to be a dick, just you're, yeah, I can go to a party and not drink because I don't want to drink. And you're okay with that. And they're going to have to be okay with that because that's who the hell you are. Shit like that. Having backbone. Mm-hmm. Being living authentically so that what people see is you. And that's really hard, especially for young people nowadays, because it's all bullshit Instagram stuff, highlight reels, all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. But it's like you want to make sure that anybody that's around you knows exactly who the fuck you are. Mm-hmm. And are proud of that. All that shit's good. But I would write yourself a business plan about your school experience.
Okay.
And then do the work to make it happen.
Got you. Okay. Thank you.
All right.
That was motivating. You should become a public speaker.
You know what I do? I talk to young people like you.
Really?
Hopefully it affects your life.
It did. It really did.
We'll see. We'll see. You have to keep showing up.
I know. I have to.
That's the problem with all that. You know who Jocko Willink is?
Oh, yeah, I know who he is.
Okay, so you know his saying that, what does he say? He says, something eats motivation for breakfast.
I don't know the saying.
Oh, come on, we gotta find this.
I just know he's like...
Yeah, he's a tough guy and everything. Discipline eats motivation for breakfast. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's some good things Jocko does and some whatever stuff. But the thing is, that statement there is killer. Discipline eats motivation for breakfast. You need to keep showing up for yourself and others. Even when you don't feel like it. Even when it's the last thing you want to do today, you got to show up. Because your motivation fades. Mm-hmm. Like your enthusiasm. You leave this room and walk. You're like, damn, I'm going to go do that.
Yeah.
Well, you got to do it tomorrow and the next day and the next day and the next day. You got to build discipline into your life. Mm-hmm. Where you're going to keep showing up for yourself and others. And become a valuable member of the tribe. And it's every day, every hour of the day, you have to keep showing up. Mm-hmm. And it has to be a habit. And you can't give yourself a pass for a good long time. You have to just keep showing up. Like Jocko's breathing down your neck, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just, and that is a very true thing. It's like, if you're relying on motivation, you've already lost. You got to show up even when it's the last thing you want to do. You know, you start running every day, and then it starts getting cold and rainy and dark, and you're not excited to get out of your warm bed. That's when discipline takes over, and you get up anyway, and you keep doing it because you know you're on the path. And bust your ass. Now's the time you can. I can't anymore. I'm exhausted. I'm old and tired. You're young and strong. You got 15 years of busting your ass the hard way. And you should be able to do that standing on your head.
I should be able to.
Yeah. You know, there's another guy, Jordan Peterson.
Oh, I listen to him. Yeah.
Okay. He has that thing that life is about suffering. Mm-hmm. And if you're doing things right and you're smart and you do hard work and you show up, you get to choose how you suffer, but you don't get away with not suffering. So when you feel like you're suffering, that's how it's going to be forever. You're always going to be suffering. You're always going to be in turmoil. You're always going to be going through the, running the gauntlet. It's just, are you getting to run through the gauntlet you want to be running through? Because to be getting to suffer the way you want to suffer, that takes years of planning and hard work. Mm-hmm. Because suckers suffer the way they don't want to suffer. All your friends that like work shit jobs, or maybe older people that you know that have lousy jobs they hate, mm-hmm. that their whole life is nothing the way they want it to be. Like, how's this? Elon Musk or Bill Gates or the Amazon guy or whatever. You know what those guys do every day? They suffer. They work hard every day. And it's hard all day. But they're so successful, it's hard exactly how they want it to be hard. They are winning, but they don't get out of suffering. They're in agony every day. But they're in agony playing the game they want to play. Mm-hmm. That's what you should strive for. Like, this is, like, every day you should start up, this is gonna hurt. You know?
Yeah.
This is gonna hurt.
Yeah.
But are you getting on the right path? Because 20 years from now, if you woke up every day and say, this is gonna hurt, and you were well-guided and on the right track, you're playing exactly the game you want to play. Mm-hmm. You're making the money you need to make. You're solving the problems you want to solve. But it's not easy. It always hurts. Mm-hmm. You know? It's just, imagine it hurting every day, and nothing about that day is intriguing to you. That's failure.
Mm-hmm.
That's failure. Mm-hmm. But you're gonna suffer. And you're gonna suffer for the rest of your life. And if you know that right now, it gets a lot easier just to do the suffering. But it's always to direct you and guide you. You're trying to get to that destination.
Mm-hmm.
And you do that work. And you wake up tomorrow and you do it again. And you're disciplined like Jocko. Right? It's hard. All right.
Well,
I hope that all helps.
That really helps. Yeah.
Do some thinking. Do some writing. Here's the thing. Start a piece of paper tonight or a Word document or whatever.
Yeah.
And say, I'm an astrophysics major because.
Okay.
You can fill in the rest.
Okay. I'll make sure to do my research too for the next interview.
What's that?
I'll do my research next time.
Always know who you're talking to.
Okay.
That's very good.
Yeah.
All right, dude.
Nice to meet you.
Very cool. I'm glad you're thinking about this stuff.
Yeah, thank you.
Yep.